Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Do you feel the disconnect between what the government tells us about the employment situation? The unemployment rate's down to 7%. And what you're experiencing, as they say, on the ground, either yourself or someone you love, are you hearing about more people getting good jobs, higher paying jobs, more permanent jobs? Or are you hearing more people who used to make middle class incomes now making less than middle class incomes, if any incomes at all? And the word permanent job is unfortunately becoming a quaint anachronism, replaced by, hey, I got a project, 3 months. Well, indeed, the statistics are, when you look beyond the official unemployment rate, there are shadow statistics about the true unemployment rate, and most importantly, the actual average per capita earning, which is down to its lowest point in 35 years. There was a guy who made a post about this. It was called 20 Ordinary Americans Talk About the Economic Despair, and he cites the statistics, but statistics make lousy radio, so I won't belabor those anymore, although anybody who's interested, I'd be pleased to. You can actually just go to my blog. I've written about this recently. My blog, martynemko.blogspot.com, martynemko.blogspot.com. But I found the human side of things both more emotionally riveting and perhaps make better radio. So I thought I'd read a few of those for you. But do know, take heart. I never, ever, I believe in one of my core philosophies on this show is to never present a problem that you don't offer solutions to. So while I cannot... we have tried on this show a number of times to have real good experts come in to talk about what they think the long-term solution is, and some talk about, you know, creating more entrepreneurial opportunities. Others say that's going to be there'll be too few of those. Some say more government jobs, created taxpayer-paid jobs. Others say that's merely eating our seed corn. So, you know, I've come away not having any macro solutions, but one of my jobs on this show is to help you survive whether we will continue in further decline or rebound, but to give you practical solutions. And I will offer those. I've been collecting a whole host of under-the-radar careers, which I think for individuals is the ultimate way to survive unless you're a superstar. You're a superstar, you can get hired in anything, but if you're a regular mortal, you need to go under the radar. So I'm going to devote most of the show to the under-the-radar, but I was very moved by these stories of, quote, 20 ordinary Americans talk about the economic despair that is growing like a cancer all around them. This was assembled by Michael Snyder recently. Okay. Okay, yes, the American economy is in the pits. I know five languages, have degree. These are quotes, have 3 degrees, 2 graduate degrees. I lived overseas for 16 years, and I still can't find a job in the U.S. Everything is broken in America. Maybe I should give up my U.S. citizenship. Another one, I've been struggling since I finished college in 2010. My dream is to work in the courts, law enforcement, but it's almost impossible to get a call back for an interview. I made the final 30 out of 300 applicants that applied for 3 positions, didn't land one. I have two master's degrees. I'm 61 years old. I'm earning $10 an hour. What does that say about the current economy? Another one. I work for one of the banks. I was in mortgages. I saw the decline coming. So several months ago, I asked to get into another area of the bank, and fortunately for me, they granted my request. A lot of people are losing their jobs, and there's really no prospects out there for anything else whereby the same kind of money could be made. I'll be making nothing near what I had been earning, but I'm at least grateful to be employed. This is also sad to watch this happen. Next person. What I'm aware of is that every person I know had to switch jobs in the last 5 years took a pay cut. Smallest cut among my friends was 10%. The average was closer to 18%. No, we are headed down a bad road, and we are past the point of no return. Next person. After spending most of my life in the middle class, I now consider myself lower class due to age and income. Nothing wrong with that. I'm still able to provide for myself with what I need and some of my wants. I am like most retirees today. around where I live, things seem okay, but I live in a university town. Go to some of the surrounding areas and it's desolate. Car dealerships closed, entire streets with abandoned... excuse me. With abandoned stores. The only activity is a one-clerk post office. I know people in our church who are a paycheck away from going over the edge or going over due to a spouse dying and losing one or more of their Social Security checks. I see grim, more homeless. A local church is feeding many more, including some folks living out of their cars. Lots of children. Mostly minimum wage jobs in the area. If it were not for the university and its 34,000 students, this place would look as bad as the smaller communities. Here we've got jobs mostly part-time or low-wage. Our problem these days is so many people dependent on government programs no one wants to work. They do better on the programs than working and paying for insurance. Housing is very depressed still. Still more homeless around. Local churches straining to provide food. Crime is up. Drugs, which were down, are coming back with a vengeance. Middle class here are senior citizens on Social Security. Young retirees, not the older ones. Older ones seem to be struggling. Sad, end quote. Next person. I live outside Chicago. The town we live in has about 8,000 people in it. Very middle-class farm community. Unemployment so high, and so is underemployment. We know many people living off two part-time jobs. That seems to be the norm around here. Or people taking jobs they never would have considered in the past just to get by. My son used to work for Caterpillar in Aurora, but was, quote, let go to bring in new workers at a lower pay scale. It took him over a year, which really isn't that bad, to find a part-time job at 3M. Next person. Drive around L.A. at 3 a.m. any day, and you'll see the devastating and pervasive homelessness from 8 to 80-year-olds and the massage parlors and hookers on the street of used-to-be high-end neighborhoods are exploding. No other way to make a living. Next person. A couple of years ago, it was reported that 9,000 people a night slept in their cars here in San Diego. Special car parks are set up now in church parking lots. The cops look the other way. Wonder what the figure is now. And the final one on this list, another person says, if things get half as bad as people say, how bad do you think they really will get? Real unemployment is already at the Great Depression levels. See John Williams' shadow statistics, which contradicts the Bureau of Labor Statistics' bogus figures. But when this depression deepens, I think we'll be looking at 50 to 60% unemployment, easily much worse than in the 30s. It'll be absolute hell for millions of Americans. And when the money stops flowing from the government to the man down the street, the blood will flow in the streets, lots of it. So obviously those are just anecdotal, but it's about, there were 20 of them. And that comports very well with, unfortunately, what I am hearing from my clients, from my friends, from people. When I go to these high-end fundraisers with my wife, Barbara Nemco, we hear quietly when people stop, you know, just doing ha-ha talk, there is a quiet fear and desperation that that the middle class is truly hollowed out. As I said, I can't solve the problem macro at this point, although I've been trying on the show to have guests who offer solutions, but they all seem palliative. But I can be helpful to you as an individual trying to survive in the system. And who knows, maybe things are going to get better or a lot better, you know. The main focus of the show is to help you as individuals today, at least. I'm not going to deal with the macro issues. So I'm going to offer a bunch of these under-the-radar careers that I haven't mentioned. I've been doing that periodically over the last month. I'm going to offer some more, but this is a great time. This whole show is really devoted to you. If you or someone you love is struggling, and you don't want to hear more ha-ha talk like you hear on certain TV and radio stations, and you would like some straight, for what it's worth, my best shot at trying to help you in today's economy without any BS, I do these things called 3-minute workovers. If you'd like one of them, just give me a call. The price is certainly right here at KALW. The price is zero. Zippo, nada, as I'm fond of saying. The phone number here for that 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And, okay, while we're waiting for the calls to come in, I will now start ticking off some of these careers that I think are under the radar and offer some realistic prospects for real average people, not just the superstars who are the performers and the athletes who say, you know, just work hard enough and dream big and you can get what you want. That's BS for all but the very lucky, the incredible schmoozer, or the brilliant. So, okay. Something that I believe is going to continue to always be non-offshoreable, relatively rewarding. In the blue-collar careers, my favorite is electrician, because you are not spending your time usually crawling under, under pipes, and you don't have to be lifting heavy things. So I really do think, especially as we are an ever more connected, electrified populace, where people are, they're expanding broadband, they're, getting bigger internet pipes in their homes or businesses, or simply because ever more of what we do is automated, electrified, there is ever need for bigger circuits. I think that electrician is always going to be a relatively viable field. Fundraiser. We live in a value. America's value right now is very much redistributed, where if you watch TV or read the New York Times or read anything but extreme right-wing publications, you're going to see a dramatic increase in the percentage of attention that is being spent on, quote, the least among us, the poor. That means nonprofits. Nonprofits, lifeblood is money. If you're a fundraiser, you don't have to necessarily be a pitcher, although, yeah, somebody who can pitch rich people and companies to donate, that's great. But the whole fundraising apparatus, whether it be at universities or nonprofits, is massive and filled with people who are not necessarily the front people. They are database people. They are prospect researchers researching, developing research dossiers on fat cats, so that when the pitcher does go to them, they can hit their emotional hot buttons. If you are any, if you have those kind of redistributive values, you're interested in redistributing to the poor, there is no more robust area than in the area of fundraising, both behind the scenes and in front. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you love is looking for some career help, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, whether you're well-employed or unemployed, whether it's a crisis of meaning or a crisis of fear you're going to lose your job, or you're upwardly aspiring, maybe you've got a great business idea and you want to run it by me, I'll give you the kinder version of the Shark Tank. Or whatever your career problem, I usually can give you some help. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And before I offer some more of these under-the-radar careers, let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's your situation? Hi, it's you. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marty. How are you?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
Well, you're reading those emails. And you get all these people with all these degrees, and they're working on jobs that aren't worth anything, $10 an hour.
Yep.
So if you start at the neighborhood level and you empower the neighborhood, which is what I already started doing in San Francisco, created $1.3 million for a nonprofit that takes care of the elderly, the drug addicted, the alcoholics, and the mentally ill, and fed over 100,000 people the best food that money can buy, you're creating confidence. So you come in, you call the neighborhood for its resources, what does it have that it can work with. You gather the votes together, you educate the people on how the issues became problems in their neighborhood, and that creates a like-minded group of thinkers who become a like-minded group of voters who vote the people out of office that are doing these things to us, but you have to do it on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood level. Yep. You got to get down to the bottom, work it up.
For what it's worth, for me, I have lost belief in the odds of any one vote or even collective action, other than something major like Move On, which has a massive impact on the electorate. I'm not convinced that community organizing is particularly going to have enough effect to justify all that effort. But I do think, I agree with you, that maybe there are many more jobs that could be created at the community level, where there where there are people who express their needs to have this done, an individual or a block or a little neighborhood that needs this done, and a job gets created, and everybody kicks in for whatever it is, a private security force or a green space where people can plant their local organic, sustainable, plants so that they're going to build the raised beds. I do like the idea of neighborhoods getting together. I think that, again, that may or may not solve the macro problem, but I think you're on the right track, at least in terms of helping individual small communities to develop. And so I appreciate your call very much, and thanks very much.
Let me give you another thought there.
Sure.
So I'm in the worst neighborhood in San Francisco. So you got a shipyard that's the third largest Superfund site in America.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a hard stop. So if they don't want community organizing, they don't want to get together, and they want to stop the gentrification, which is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
So inevitably, you have nothing. You have no choice whatsoever, because the people you grew up next to all of your lives in the Bayview, you're going to be living across the bay, because you're not going to be able to live in San Francisco because the the rents and the cost of the housing is going to be forbidding, which is we already have the number one cost of living in America.
Yeah.
So we've got to stop this someplace.
And you know, the they say that you got in, you know, the Serenity Prayer tells you as we approach the Christmas season, it's, you know, it's, it comes to mind, you've got to know what's changeable and what's not. I've just butchered the phrase, but, you know, it seems to me that in terms of causes, not only is it going to be very difficult to stop gentrification, but I also am not convinced that that's the greatest cause in the world. Does everybody have a right to live in San Francisco? You know, is it, you know, with all the injustices and all the problems in the world, if somebody's got to move to some other place, is that really so outrageous to move out of the Bayview? Or given that the Bayview has certainly also been a breeding ground for drugs, violence, etc., maybe there's an argument that could be made for distributing that away from that pocket and getting people moving away from that may not be such a bad thing. And certainly among all the other causes, you know, I have a weird cause that I believe in that most people, you know, ridicule me for, but I really do believe that right now the most underserved community, the most underexamined community is elementary school gifted kids. No Child Left Behind is resulting in gifted kids being completely ignored. They're sitting bored, stultified. It's torture for them to sit 6 and 7 hours a day getting 2 and 3 periods of reading on a low level because No Child Left Behind focuses only on the low-achieving kids. So all these kids who are going to be the ones who are going to cure our cancers, cure our social ills, are sitting stultified and bored while we're busy teaching, you know, having them tutor first graders in reading The Cat in the Hat. For me, that's a cause that is underrepresented, would do a tremendous amount for society. So rather than worrying about some people who are not going to be able to live in the Bayview, I think there are causes that are better, that would make humankind better. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco. If you especially would like, I'm happy to talk about macro issues related to work. That's fine. But, if, you know, one of the things that, you know, if there's anything that people say I do relatively well, it's help people with their career problems. So that's what I'm giving you here for. This is my pro bono work. If you or someone you love would like some free career advice to help you with your career, any aspect at any level, phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. In the meantime, as promised, I'm going to share some more under-the-radar careers that I think offer reasonable prospects in this economy. I am a big fan, actually, of landscape architecture, because although it's certainly a luxury item for individuals, our green focus, our focus on the environment, has actually created jobs, government jobs primarily, or where corporations are building their corporate headquarters or whatever. They're wanting to be very green. And so, you know, in terms of the plantings, in terms of the hardscaping, et cetera, it's not a dying field. And because it is, it's part outdoors, it's part creative, it's part practical, and, you know, maybe just partly because I'm a lover of plants and flowers. Sometimes I trust my vegetables and plants more than I trust people. It's a wonderful career. And I've had a client who was quite successful. He could not find a good job here, but he became a specialist in waterfront landscaping in China. China has a very large coastline, and they are building lots of things right there on that coast, from everything from theme parks to apartment projects. And he made a living. He developed an understanding of Asian sensibility. He's not himself Asian, but he developed a sense of understanding of Asian sensibilities and got a job working for a major American firm that does its work in China. So I've always liked that career. I think it still remains very viable. Here is one career before I go to the phones that I love to death, but I worry that it's going away. But it's such a rewarding career and such a high degree of satisfaction, and that is librarian. There's a wonderful contributor to the show who he emails me all these wonderful articles. His name is Mark Mackler. I'm sure he won't mind my mentioning him. He's talked about the where the opportunities are in libraries, not the public libraries, because ever more people are seeing using Google as their library and the internet as their library. But there are special libraries. And again, this is under the radar. There are libraries that law firms have. There are libraries that publications have. I remember when I was an editor at U.S. News, they have a separate library there for all of the journalists to help them find the information they need. There are medical librarians who work in hospitals. there are university librarians who specialize in a certain, you know, area. So if you want to be a library, yes, a librarian, I understand that you have reason to be daunted. There is not a lot of hiring among general, like children's librarians or young adult librarians or even general reference librarians. But I think that aiming at some kind of special librarianship may still, while certainly no slam dunk, is an under-the-radar, wonderful career with high satisfaction. You're really helping people. You're also living in the world of ideas, and you're always learning about something new all the time. I just think, and I just find librarians very nice people. They're intelligent without being stodgy. They're caring. It's a great group of people to work around. So that's my thought about librarianship. Phone number again here at Work with Marty Nemko. If you or someone you love is struggling with their work life in any way, I'll try to give you a hand with what I call a 3-minute workover. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now back to the phones. It's your turn.
Your operator.
Yeah, I guess that person's gone. Oh, well. Well, then I will continue to offer some more tips for under-the-radar careers. This is, you know, there are a lot of people who like to be hands-on. I've tried to mix both white and blue-collar careers here. There is a lot of people like to work with their hands, but they only think about the kind of the obvious, the plumber, the electrician, the carpenter, etc. In fact, there's a wonderful career called lighting design. Whether it be lighting a building's external, outside in order for security purposes or for aesthetic purposes in the lobby or being very green or lighting a movie set or lighting a convention operation. Lighting design, as the lighting gets ever more sophisticated, many ways less expensive. I'm very involved in the world of theater. And I remember the days when theater lighting had these things called gels. You had to get up on these high ladders and put these little pieces of cellophane, of different colored cellophane, on to get the right look. Now they've got these wonderful LED lights that can create any color in the rainbow just by flipping a switch. So, you know, lighting designer, again, a nice under-the-radar career. This for more blue-collar folks. And again, those blue-collar jobs are the kind of jobs that can't get offshored. And so I try to focus on that because, believe me, with the cost of hiring an American ever growing, Obamacare merely being the latest of the enormous costs, Social Security, workers' compensation, disability, paid family leave, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, employers are indeed offshoring as much as they possibly can. And so I'm trying to focus on the jobs that are offshore resistant. Again, phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. What's that the number for? Is the number for a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. And now, back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Is it me?
It is.
Hi, Marty. I am a nonprofit fundraiser, mm-hmm. and I'm utterly burnt out in the role. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been thinking kind of small. I've always thought in terms of nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Is that's where I live, that's where I work. And I need help kind of rethinking my professional life.
Sure. When I hear the word burnout, that's like the symptom. It's not the disease, because there's many different ways many different causes of burnout. For example, like it's like a headache. If somebody has a headache, it could be a brain tumor, it could be a migraine, it could be simply a boss that they can't stand. So I want to understand, before we can come up with a new, better idea for you career-wise, I want to understand the source of the burnout or sources. Can you tell me what those are, please?
I would say my experience has been poor leadership, a lack of the organization to kind of own its end of the act of fundraising and building community around mm-hmm. the cause, that disproportionately they turn to and expect the development director to do all the heavy lifting, and it's more than a one person or two person job.
Well, when I listen to that, that sounds like you're in the right church but the wrong pew. You said that you spent your whole life in and around nonprofits, and all you're telling me is that this particular leadership is not optimal. So is the right answer not to leave the church of nonprofits, but rather to find one where there's leadership that's more consistent with who you are and where the kind of lifting you'd be asked to do is consistent with what you do well?
Well, it's funny, you know, I have a few good friends who are also fundraisers, and it seems to be common that the job is too big. I think the question you pose is a great one, and I don't really have an answer, but my feeling is that it's the role has just kind of typically unrealistic expectations.
Well, and again, this is for what it's worth. We're going to move to coming up with some other career in a minute, but before I do that, I feel like that sometimes there is a phrase that's used all the time called managing up. Learning how to manage expectations and learning how to manage the boss. If you are secure enough that you've got a good skill set, the wise person would go to their boss and with calm and equanimity say, here is what you've currently are asking me to do. Let's look at this. Is this reasonable for one person to do? Is it reasonable to be done? Are these dreams rather than realities? And set some limits and say, I am willing to work 50 hours a week. I'm not willing to work 70. Here is what looks like what you're asking me to do is 70 hours a week. What would you like me to prioritize? Or do we want to hire somebody? Do we want to get an intern? What is it? Is part of the problem a failure of, what's the word? I guess my honest word is failure of balls or uterus to quietly but assertively lay out the situation. And if you did that and the boss says, I don't care, I'm going to keep my unrealistic expectations, which they wouldn't say, but they would imply, then it's time to get out. But until you've done that, until you've been leaderly and made the case for why it is their goals are unrealistic, I don't believe it's time to leave yet because it ain't so easy to find another job. What's your reaction to that?
Agreed. And I have had that conversation just recently. And I feel like I'm getting lip service and a pat on the head.
Okay, so fine. So is the right answer, cosmically, if you look at the goddess within you, is the right answer to find another nonprofit and try to lay out, in the interview process, not even after you're hired, but to explain what that you are a realist. While you believe in nonprofit causes, you also don't believe in chasing long-shot dreams that aren't realistic. And getting a sense of how realistic they are. And only after if you're getting a sense, you go and you apply for a bunch of jobs and you network your way into a bunch of job interviews, and they're all these delusional dreamers about what is unrealistic, then you can go to the private sector. But I'm not convinced that necessarily that endemic to the nonprofit sector is utter, unrealism. Do you think I'm wrong?
Honestly, my experience has been that the jobs typically are not well supported, and they're to some degree unrealistic. But maybe I just need to be a little more savvy in the whole interview process.
That's right. That is what it is really important that we often are so insecure when we go in for a job interview that all we're focused on is, am I sounding like an idiot? And instead of realizing it's a first date where you're checking them out as well as they're checking you out. And you're asking them good probing questions is not only a way to help you vet them and see if you want to work there, but it actually makes you not appear desperate, and they're more likely to hire you if you ask a reasonable number of probing questions. So I'm not letting you off the phone so fast, though. So let's agree that that's one possibility, that I do want you to interview for some other positions, but I want you to treat it like a first date, ask a few probing questions to get a sense of whether they are likely to be realistic. But now let's assume that it's all going to be for naught, and that every nonprofit you come in contact with is delusional. They want you to raise $30 million when they raised 7 cents before, and expect you to work 18 hours a day and no vacation. Let's now look to the alternative. You used the word, when we first started out the conversation, you said you thought you were thinking too small and you were thinking about for-profit. Tell me a little more about what you're thinking in terms of thinking bigger.
I guess I've just been on a single track for a while, and I don't even think I know how to kind of objectively imagine the alternatives.
Great.
Or the possibilities.
Give me a couple of clues. Tell me two or three things. What's your first name?
Heather.
Heather, tell me two or three things that are quintessential truths about you that might help me come up with an idea for you.
Well, I do really want to be part of the solution and not the problem. I couldn't go work for Chevron. I have to feel like I'm helping to kind of tackle some of our larger societal issues.
So how do you get it? I mean, Chevron, and you know, how do you do that in a for-profit situation?
So the solar industry is one area that I want to explore more.
Okay, great. So let's play with that. Let's pretend that I am the president of a solar company, and I say to you, Heather, I'll give you any job here as long as you don't screw it up. And here are some of the jobs. Which ones of these do you want? Do you want to work in human resources hiring people? Do you want to work in the finance department? Do you want to work in installation? Do you want to work in logistics, being a dispatcher? Do you want to be in advertising? Do you want to be graphic design? Do you want to be in public relations? Do you want to be, I'm guessing the next one I'm going to say is what you want to do. Do you want to be our community relations specialist? Helping to build relationships with the community and give out money to worthy causes. Which of those jobs do you want to do?
Well, that, or perhaps sales.
Okay, great.
It would be sales with a good cause.
Okay, let me give you the sales test, whether you have what it takes to sell. Are you resilient? So when you get five no's in a row, are you likely to curl up in a ball and smoke a joint, or are you more likely to go and see what you can do to improve your sales techniques?
I'm pretty tough. I mean, having been in a nonprofit fundraising, field, I'm pretty tough.
Okay, good. Do you have unlike me, who does not have this gift, do you have the gift of being instantly likable? When people meet you, they kind of glow, either because you look good or you sound good or you, do people tend to like you and want to do things for you by nature?
They do, and they trust me quickly because I'm a straight shooter.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And are you money driven? I mean, people who are salespeople are absolutely money driven. It's all about sales quotas.
Reasonable income. I just want a relatively reasonable income.
That tends not to work. Yeah, sales jobs are all about quotas. There is a whiteboard in every company's sales thing that says, here you made this percentage of quota this week. You have made this percentage of contacts, and your money is, usually a small base, and it's almost all commission. So unless you're money driven, you usually don't sell. You don't have to be. You can believe in the product. You should believe in the product.
Yeah.
But you'd really have to be somewhat money driven generally.
Well, I mean, that has sort of been the nature of nonprofit fundraising. I mean, you're doing it for a cause, and you're doing it because you believe in it, but you have to raise a certain number of dollars. So it seems like there's
some money orientation. But has that been your weakness? I mean, have these goals been such that it requires a money-oriented person, a bottom-line closing, a person who likes to close the deal,
Perhaps, because that is not who I am.
Right. That's the sense I'm getting. Heather, so what I'm guessing is you might want to try this. As instead of a 180-degree pivot, companies and foundations, they all are related to the whole, the kind of nonprofit mindset where money is the necessary evil but not a driver. I'm wondering if you need to network your way and or answer ads to foundations, corporate foundations, and or community relations jobs, because you are, it sounds from everything you're saying, you are just, you have those nonprofit values. And the other answer, of course, is government. Government, as you well know, government continues to grow and will continue to grow. And so I invite you, San Francisco, both San Francisco City and County, the state of California, and federal government have major presences here in the Bay Area. So I invite you to look. One of the easiest ways to find all the government agencies is to simply go old school and look at the white pages. The front pages of your white page has all the government listings. And take a look and see if there are agencies that make your heart sing. Is there an agency right now within government that turns you on? Is there something that, you mentioned solar. So, are you an environmentalist? Is that your core?
Very.
Okay. So great. So we've got the EPA, we've got Cal EPA, we've got OSHA, we've got water protection agencies, we've got coastal protection. There's endless commissions and agencies. Mm. And so, it seems to me that it seems like your plan A would be to keep staying in the do some inquiries into the standard nonprofit sector and do some good vetting of them, treat it as a first date.
Yeah.
If that doesn't work well, expand to the foundation world and the world of environmental agencies within the government. How does that sound?
Okay, well, that's a nice step forward. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko. And I'd like to help you take a step forward if you or someone you love is struggling with your career. Happy to try to help you out with what I call a three-minute work over here on KALW and Work with Marty Nemko. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Hi. I'm calling not for myself, but it is for myself. I'm calling for my husband.
Okay.
He has been a pharmacist for his total career.
Right.
He now works for a large corporation, and it has become a crazy profession. It has involves now, it's very corporatized.
Are you talking about like a CVS or a Rite Aid, you know, one of the retailers?
Yeah, got it. I'm trying to be politically correct here.
That's hard. No, it's, anyway, it's the smart, there are great jobs in pharmacy, but they sure are not in retail pharmacy. They are in hospital pharmacy and university medical center pharmacy.
He used to work for the university, and then they did away with the pharmaceutical department, and the only ones that was left was the in-house, which was very different, where you worked these insane hours.
Right.
You know, you were the late-night shift, you know.
My first choice, if I were a pharmacist, I'd be looking at UCSF and Stanford that have major research operations and have big pharmacy departments, both within their hospital and in their research facility. Is that something he has investigated sufficiently?
No, he has not. He's just unfortunately become very beaten down and depressed by the whole thing. And so that's the reason I'm calling, because he's somewhat immobilized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. My board operator, Debbie Kennedy, also said the Veterans Administration may be good. Now, in terms of immobilization, sometimes that is where spouses can really be helpful. You know, depending upon who he is, sometimes sometimes he needs a loving taskmaster, someone who, gives him a back massage, but also says, get your butt in the chair and make that call now, and I'm going to sit here until you do. How could you be of best support to him?
Well, I think I could do like what you said, you know, maybe gather some numbers and give him little assignments, you know.
That's like, the best.
Oh, did you call so-and-so?
Making it so easy. I love that. You know, I've learned as a career counselor as well, I have many clients who will take absolutely no initiative. And so the only way I get them to do anything is by actually giving them the numbers. You will call these five people. It seems shocking in a way, but their resistance is, you know, because they just are afraid of rejection, or they're sometimes they don't even want to work. They're sick and tired of working.
That's where he is right now, sick and tired of working.
Yeah, so... the question is, would a break, sometimes, you know, in my mind, inertia tends to take hold. So the longer he says, you know, I think I really need a break to recharge my batteries, it usually doesn't work that way. Usually the longer he doesn't look, the more likely he's going to be to inert. Objects at rest tend to stay at rest. So should, in your judgment, if you are the goddess within you, looking objectively at him, do you think he needs a break where he should go and, you know, rent a cabin in Bolinas and veg out for 2 months? Or do you think he needs to get on the saddle and look for a job now?
He would love the break, but I'm scared of the break personally, because the way our economy is now, even though you have really good skills, doesn't mean you can get a job.
Well, what about the compromise solution? What if we said you circle it, you give him 1 week or 2 weeks, or he gives himself 1 week or 2 weeks, to do whatever the hell he wants. He can sleep in, he can go and play with the dog, he can garden, he can sing Christmas carols. But then after that, you know, maybe say January 2nd. On January 2nd, that's when his butt's in gear, and you give him that list of 20 people to call and or write to, and he's got to do it on that day. 20 people on January 22nd, and you break his face. How's that sound?
Sounds pretty good, but the real problem is to get the free time to, you know, kind of regroup and recover from the job. I mean, we just went on a long vacation for an anniversary.
So clearly, that's not going to do. He's already had the time off, so that's not.
Yeah, so
work.
He's had the rest.
The hell with that.
Now he's back in the saddle.
The hell with that crap. So you know, right now, you know, it doesn't take much time to write 20 brief cover letters touting his best abilities. And making up 20 of those 20 follow-up phone calls. So enough of that crap. You know, actually, this late December is the very best time of the year to look for a job, because hiring people, absolutely. Because most people, job seekers, have stopped looking, and most employers are slowing down. They have more time. They are more likely to have the Christmas spirit. They're more likely to give you the time of day. So not wait. We're at the 15th of December now. When's his day off?
Tuesday.
Good. His Tuesday is not a day off. at the here is the requirement. Between now and Tuesday, you are to make a list of 20 people he should write in or phone. On Tuesday, he's going to be making all 20 contacts, and then Tuesday night, you're going to reward him, or he's going to reward him by doing the most fun thing that both of you like to do. That what's the most fun thing the two of you would like to do? And we keep it clean. What's the most fun
probably
thing?
Probably right now, because he's so very physically tired, is probably go out to a really nice restaurant.
Cool. What's the name of the restaurant?
Kind of la-di-da restaurant.
Good. What's the la-di-da restaurant that he would most love to go to Tuesday night?
I think Harry Danko.
Great. Okay. So Dr. Nemco's prescription for you is that you are to research and find 20 people who could hire him for a good pharmacy job, and then tell him today that Dr. Nemco's part of the prescription is that he is going to, on Tuesday, he's going to make those 20 inquiries, whether a phone call and a letter or both, and then on Tuesday night you're going to Danko's. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Feel free to call back. Let me know how it goes, huh?
Okay, thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too. Let's go back to the phones. I like taking calls. If you, I'll give out the phone number, though. If you or someone you love stuck career-wise, I like to try to help you. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco for a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Marty.
Sure.
This is me. Hi.
Hi.
So my question is actually, I'm a public school teacher. I just started in that profession a year ago, and I love it very much. I'm
Great.
Very happy with my job.
Great.
I'm wondering if you have any advice on how long it would be before it's appropriate for me to seek kind of more leadership positions, you know, department chair, things like that, at the school in a way that other people would be willing to listen to what I have to say, but that I would also be able to have more influence and power on the way, particularly curriculum, is done in my department.
Yeah, maybe never. There is a completely different skill set required to be a educational leader and a teacher. There is a magic. I'm glad that you love your career. There are too few teachers. About a third of teachers drop out in the first few years of teaching. And the fact that you love it in those most difficult times means you have the gift. It's fabulous. But the gift of teaching is very often different than the gift of trying to get other teachers to do what you do. So I would caution you. I've seen the highway of teachers who aspired upward is littered with people who were disillusioned, and they followed the prestige, they wanted more influence. The first thing I would invite you to do, if you are proud of what you do and how you do it, I would invite you to have somebody come in and video what you do in the classroom, make YouTube videos and post them, and invite the principal, if he or she wants, at a staff meeting or faculty meeting to show those videos, and stay in the classroom for a while. You've only been doing it a year. You may want to do it forever. Let me tell you that the amount of employee dissatisfaction among principals, deans, assistant principals, and is very high, because you're really a marionette. Whereas in the classroom, you have a measure of control, although the Common Core standards are going to dramatically restrain what you can do. You still have quite a measure of control. When you are a principal or a department chair, you are much more subject to state regulations, government regulations, what the principal wants, what the parents want. And so that grass may not be greener. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like administration is not something that I'm particularly interested in right now, just because the part of my job that I love the most is working with students and being with kids all day, and I know that that's something that I would terribly miss. But I guess I just, because we have new standards and because things are changing, and I teach history and social studies, which is a particularly, I think, with the new standards, controversial set of what it really means to be a history teacher moving forward. I would like to have more influence and direction, and kind of seeing that our Common Core standards are implemented in a way that I think is
Two thoughts. First of all, be careful. I've looked very carefully, not at the History Common Core standards, but I've looked very carefully at both the English language and especially the Math Common Core standards.
Yeah.
And I'm also aware that in New York City they've already been implementing them, and there are teachers quitting because it is so hard, so abstract in the name of high standards. So be careful to become a cheerleader. It's like the ex-smoker who becomes a zealot for anti-smoking. Be a little careful. But if you, let's assume that you're right and that you're a true believer, you really believe the Common Core is wonderful because it teaches broader thinking skills, etc., then what I would invite you to do is, as I said, in addition to making that YouTube video of you implementing difficult core, Common Core standards yourself, I'd invite you to get involved in your professional association and give talks at conferences. They have local conferences, local meetings, state meetings, and national meetings. And that's a way you can broaden your influence while still, in terms of your core day job, doing what you do best is working with kids. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I don't know that I want to be a cheerleader. I think it's part of making sure that we, you know, think through what we're doing before we just start jumping into a new set of standards. It seems like people just jump into whatever the new state mandate is without thinking about it.
Yep. That's, you know, as somebody who's been, my wife's the superintendent of schools in Napa County, we've been in education, and I have my PhDs in evaluation of education. We've been, you know, through dozens of iterations of the innovation du jour, and it always lasts about 3 years or 4 years, and then it gives way to the next thing. And so, it's important to certainly explore it briefly. One other thing you might want to do is talk to your principal and ask if he or she is planning to have faculty meetings regarding this, and then you can simply be an active, tactful participant. Don't be a zealot. Just ask good questions, make general comments, offer to make that YouTube video, whatever. Keep it from being too outrageous. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Don't want to step on toes.
Too much. If it was something that it was, a surefire thing that was going to work, it's one thing. But it's completely unproven. It's a bunch of academics who got together and created this set of standards, this Common Core that there was never a standard they didn't like, and they're massive. You know, I happen to know a principal who's been trying to implement the standards, and he's thrown his hand up. His teachers are in revolt, and he says, just teach half the damn standards. It's an unproven thing, and be careful. Careful.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Okay. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the call. Good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. I'll give up. We've got enough line calls online. So, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Namkos. Your turn on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Marty?
Yes.
My name's Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
And I'd like to represent the people in their mid-50s who have been beaten to a pulp by the recession.
Yep.
I was laid off 3 times in 2009, 2010, 2011.
Sorry.
I have 20 years. Thank you. I have 20 years of experience in PR.
Right.
Everyone says, just forget about the job, it's time to become a consultant or a subcontractor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been really beefing up all of my skills. I have a social media marketing certificate now that I got over this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to do a little bit of the marketing that I need to do to get myself out there. But can you offer some good advice for those of us who are, consultant or subcontractor wannabes who have been, at it for a little while, need a push.
Absolutely.
What do we need to do?
Yeah, the people
I'm standing on the edge, and I feel like I'm afraid to let go of the edge of the pool.
Got it. Yeah, people who are that way are generally not entrepreneurial and they need support, so they generally form partnerships. They generally either join an existing entity of one or two people, and frankly, it's women who bond more with other women, and
mm-hmm.
so you find somebody else who's either got a complementary skill set, who's not in PR, but if there's who's got a set of expertise that's complementary. Maybe it's a graphic designer. Maybe, it's a marketing communication specialist. Who the hell knows? And you both end up being mutually reinforcing to each other. And you
mm-hmm.
do. You certainly work out of your own home.
Right.
And then you make and the crucial thing when you're in your 50s, we're not allowed to be sexist, we're not allowed to be racist, but we're allowed to be ageist.
Mm-hmm.
People are ageist all the time, and so the smartest thing for you to do is to go to the niche market where your age is a plus. So there are going to be certain customers where the client customer is older, not just the person person you're working for, but the, you know, whether it be somebody, firms that are involved in elder care insurance or senior centers or retirement activities or retirement planning or you know, elder hostel, make your age serve you. Because, you know, if you're going to be talking about somebody who, you know, if your customer's business is to do publicity to teeny boppers, you know, you are not, you're, you know, like Lululemon or whatever, you're not, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
So you've got to make your, you got to do two things. You got to hook up with somebody else who's got a synergistic set of expertise where you both can motivate each other, where you both can laugh. Mm-hmm. Laughing is important.
Yep.
And then you've got to make your target market companies or nonprofits that are aimed at people 50 plus. Does that make sense?
Very much. That helps. I'm kind of going in that direction, like on my own. I'm working with a certified financial planner who
right.
is bringing out his first self-published book, and I have background in book publicity
mm-hmm.
from my 20 years doing PR at a university.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also working with a woman who is starting her own business to do crafts and art with seniors, kind of independent of activities.
They don't have any money.
No, good.
I would be focusing much more on things like, for example, universities do have elder programs to bring back in because they view older people as cash cows.
Right.
So they've got all of these elder programs, and I'd be trying to market myself as the PR person for them, given your university experience and given your age. You know, much as I love crafts and art and theater as much as anybody, but they don't have any money.
Right.
And
well,
if you're trying to make a living, I would be going back to universities and seeing if you could be the specialist in helping to market and do PR for their elder programs. Does
right.
that make sense?
It does. And just one other thing. The problem I'm having, though, is everyone wants to see what's in my portfolio. For the last 3 years, there's been nothing in
Great.
My portfolio. So that's why some of these smaller projects, I'm thinking, at least I
no.
can show.
No.
Oh,
that's
okay.
a bad idea. Because all it's going to do is going to brand the it'll reinforce the fact you have no experience in your target goal.
Mm.
What I would much rather do, see you do, is do a freebie for some college or university or whatever in that area and use that as your portfolio. You know, for starters, I would not focus on some craftsperson or some guy who's doing financial planning. No. You should really focus on what your eventual goal is going to make you enough money and do a freebie if necessary, do a low-cost thing if necessary, even do a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say nobody, let's say Stanford, you know, won't hire you to do a PR thing for their senior thing, for their senior programs, to do a theoretical one as if they were
mm-hmm.
and make that your portfolio.
Ah. Great. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yes, I am calling on behalf of my brother. He is an attorney, and he worked in government for about 15 years and then switched to the private sector and then got laid off in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And he really hasn't found a permanent job since then. What he's been doing is working on temporary jobs, document review, that sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, that's not really, you know, that's not really his full practice, and it's
right.
a lot less money. And I just wondered if there were any ideas I could pass his way, you know, to help him get back on his feet and to help him, you know, get back in
sure.
his field.
Sure. When he was a government attorney, what was he doing?
He worked for the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Okay.
And I don't remember the area he started in, but when he ended, he was in the insurance area.
Okay.
Insurance products.
Okay, great. And when he was in private sector, what kind of law was he doing?
He worked for an insurance company. They hired him because of his experience at the SEC.
Okay.
But then they reorganized and downsized, and he got laid off.
Okay. So within insurance, he was doing insurance defense work?
Oh, he was reviewing, let me see if I can explain this, when they would either develop new products or every year when they would have to, you know, turn in their information to the SEC, he was the person who was reviewing the information and, you know, giving them feedback and making sure that it would be something that the SEC would
Got it.
Look on favorably. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. What I would be doing is I'd be trying to see with Obamacare, all these insurance companies are dropping coverage for everybody. And so you
mm-hmm.
can be sure that insurance companies are going, you know, they're part of it just want to get out of the business because they just see it's going to lose the money.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there's probably a niche somewhere, either working back for the government in the area of trying to negotiate agreements with these insurance companies, or the insurance companies per se in the healthcare space. Doesn't sound like he was in health-related insurance. But I'm wondering whether that's a little minor pivot. It's very hard to make a major pivot, but I'm wondering whether he should make that little minor pivot and try to find out which are the government entities that are involved in crafting contracts, insurance contracts in the healthcare space, and as well major healthcare providers. And I am a big believer, I don't know about personally, maybe I am, but maybe I'm not, but I do believe that Kaiser, while it's in short term, they're laying people off. Long term, I do know that Obamacare was written specifically to benefit Kaiser and to hurt people like Blue Cross and Health Net and all the rest of them. So I would encourage him to go and try to do some networking in with the legal department at Kaiser Permanente.
Okay.
And see, that would seem to be the most logical next step for him to go. Make sense?
Great. Wow. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. We have time for one more call. No, we don't. Okay, let's not do that. So I promise that we can devote a significant amount of the show to under-the-radar career ideas, so let me just take a little time to do that as well. I'm a big believer. I've been focusing on both white and blue-collar careers. Especially, I've been giving a little bit more weight today to blue-collar because they're so non-offshoreable. While a locksmith makes crappy money, they make very little money, there are ever more sophisticated security systems that businesses especially are putting in. Passkey systems, it's closed-circuit TV systems, etc. So being a kind of an electronic, a high-end electronic locksmith, I think is a nice under-the-radar career. And again, I've seen too many people who were in blue-collar trades who hurt their backs and their knees by the time they're 40. So things like tile setter, when you're on your knees all the time, or plumber, where you're contorting your back all the time, I don't like those. And I also, the large number of immigrants have those kind of very basic categories of blue-collar skills, but under the radar, high-level electronic security systems, that's a little more under the radar. And again, that's always my focus in this difficult economy. It may be very difficult for Americans as a whole to have lots of middle-class people earning middle-class incomes, but it may be possible to survive as an individual, at least going under the radar. As I said, the participation rate in the economy, when I said at the top of the show, is the lowest it's been since, I think, 1970. And the actual per capita wages, while they talk about declining unemployment, the unemployment rate is down somewhat, but that doesn't count the millions of people who have given up, nor does it count somebody who was formerly making a middle-class living who's now making 10 bucks an hour. The actual per capita earnings is way down per person. There's been no recovery in that at all. So I try today to help you as much as I can with this, both the makeovers and these specific careers that are under the radar. But that is all the time we have. And so I want to thank all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday. My guest will be my wife, Barbara Nemco. We'll do a little Christmas show. I'm actually going to bring in my keyboard, play a little bit. And we're going to talk about net, whether we should be grateful. He's a nice, good Christmas theme, gratitude. Should we be net grateful for what it's like to work here in America, or should we be disgruntled and grinchy and scroogey? Anyway, until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Marty Nemco's 2,000 articles are free on his website. From there, you also can email him if you'd like coaching on your career or to comment on this program. His site, martynemco.com, that's MartyNemko.com. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco.